For JPMorgan Chase, it's been a summer surrounded not by mosquitoes, but by financial regulators.
Don't miss the numbers, the news, and Kai's final note. Subscribe to the Marketplace podcast. Find it on iTunes or online at marketplace.org/podcasts.
From APM in New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update. First, it was the settlement of allegations. It rigged electricity markets. Now the Wall Street Journal says that JPMorgan Chase could pay $600 million in the case of the cover-up of huge trades gone bad carried out by the so-called London Whale. Meanwhile, the Financial Times is reporting that U.S. regulators are also pushing for JPMorgan to pay up for allegedly misrepresenting the quality of loans it sold to government-backed mortgage companies ahead of the 2008 financial crisis. The bank is said to be resistant to a $6 billion settlement, billion with a B. David Byme is a finance professor at Columbia School of Business. Good morning.
Good morning.
So first of all, if the FT's sources are right, is it fair to say $6 billion is an impressive amount of money even for a large bank like J.P. Morgan?
Oh, that's huge. That's about a quarter of their net income. It's much larger than any other fines that they have paid. This is by far the largest case of the deluge of cases that have been flung at them. They are really fending off a lot of difficulties at the moment.
Now, the suggestions are the bank is fighting this one. But the overall case here, it's about what J.P. Morgan may have told government-backed mortgage companies, Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, about what, the quality of mortgages it was selling them?
Yeah, it involves $33 billion of mortgage-backed securities. And most of these were not actually originated by J.P. Morgan as it was then. They made several acquisitions, including Bear Stearns, and Washington Mutual was another. They acquired those companies in 2008 as part of the efforts by the regulators to help the companies that were failing. And I think most of the securities in this case originate from Washington Mutual and Bear Stearns. It turned out to be, I think, a rather serious mistake. It's not the main bank in each case that allegedly did the deed.
David Byme at Columbia University School of Business. Thank you very much.
Okay.
Apple has many authorized retail stores on college campuses around the country, but a new location opening this fall will be the first run by students. Dozens of accounting, business, and marketing majors are in charge, and there's a lot riding on their business acumen, including grades. Shannon Mullen reports.
Of all the places you might think Apple would authorize its first ever student-run store, this one's in Omaha, Nebraska.
Yes, we are a very small school compared to anybody else that's had an Apple campus-authorized store.
Creighton University professor Timothy McMahon says his students won't get paid to run the Apple store, but they'll get class credit to hire and train staff, design promotions, track sales, and run audits.
If you don't generate profit, does that mean you get a bad grade? Not if we were not expecting profits.
McMahon says the point is to graduate more students with skills employers want. Anna Brecka is director of recruiting trends. She says a lot of college grads have had internships or invented apps, but running a retail store for one of the world's biggest brands?
It's not very common that they have that deep an understanding of business and been part of starting something up. So this should definitely make these students stand out.
So what's in it for Apple? The company wouldn't comment. I'm Shannon Mullen for Marketplace.
Show Marketplace how much you like us. Stay connected to our hosts, reporters, and top stories on Facebook. Find us at facebook.com/APM Marketplace.
One of the themes this August is electrons run amok in financial markets. Last week, Goldman Sachs software put a dent in the whole options market. 2 days later, the whole NASDAQ market wouldn't start and needed to call AAA for a boost. Earlier in the month, some kind of error, still under investigation, caused a phantom 6% spike on the Shanghai stock market. Let's check in on this with Jason Voss at the CFA Institute in New York, the group that charters financial analysts. Jason, good morning.
Good morning.
So, Jason, you didn't just fall off the turnip truck. You used to manage an investment fund, right?
I did. Yes, indeed.
Well, we hear about this high-frequency computer-driven trade. Special computer networks are built to give some of these folks nanosecond advantages.
Yeah. In fact, NASDAQ and the Chicago Mercantile Exchange are spending tens of millions of dollars to build a tower, one in Chicago and another in New York, to sort of raise itself up above the curvature of the earth. And by defeating the curvature of the earth, trades can happen 4 milliseconds faster.
But it's a lot more than high-frequency trades. There's a kind of arms race for algorithms here as well.
That's exactly right. That's the other part of the story, the part that you don't hear much of in the media, is it's not just about speedy execution. It's about the sophistication of these computer programs. But they're also kind of brainless in a particular way. Yes, there's human error in entering trades, but once those algorithms are in place, they can run amok and they do dumb things like take 99% of the value of a stock away.
So the algorithms can help determine something that's crucial, which is how much the other guy is willing to pay for a stock?
Well, that's exactly right. This is how they can be dangerous. It's kind of like a doe in springtime in front of a line of stags, and she may, you know, lift a tail, flit it about or whatever, and maybe say two stags sort of break from the pack and indicate, wow, we're interested.
So these algorithms have a way of sensing if you're interested in buying and perhaps at what price.
Yeah, exactly. They quote dangle. So they show you, you know, an offering of a stock at one particular price. And then as soon as you indicate, okay, yeah, I'd like to execute the transaction there, then they raise the bid, you know, ever so slightly. And they do that until the price is way outside of your range.
Now, the tendency is to conclude that the little guy is a loser when the Titans use the heavy artillery. But it's a certain kind of little guy.
That's right. Yeah, it's the little guy who's super interested in fast speed execution. In other words, the day trader is really at a disadvantage. But the more long-term investors are actually going to do probably pretty well here because markets are much more efficient. And because of that, price execution is better, liquidity is better. And so if you're a long-term investor, you're probably going to do okay.
Jason Voss at the CFA Institute, thank you very much.
You bet. Thanks for having me.
And are you a public school teacher who has to pay for classroom supplies out of your own pocket this time of year? Well, we've got a piece at marketplace.org that you can listen to so you don't feel quite as alone in all of this. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.